Hello dear listener, hope you're an Android developer. Welcome to The Context, episode 13. My name is Hannes Dorfman.
And my name is not Artem Zanatoliev. My name is actually Artur Dryamov, and you may remember me from the episode about RxJava migration. Artem is actually missing because he recently changed the country and the company he works in, so he a little bit preoccupied at this moment. So I'm replacing him.
Yeah, our Android hipster is now living in San Francisco and rolling down the streets of San Francisco on his electric skateboard. But he said that he hasn't quit podcast at all, so he will be back in future episodes, no worries. It turns out that podcasting is a little bit time consuming, so Artur and I thought it would be great to have at least two hosts on each episode. So we asked Artur if not only for this episode, but also in the future, so that we can ensure that at least two of our three hosts are ready to produce some new episodes in the future. Actually, I hope that Artem is opening the Context podcast office in the United States so that we can add another host in the United States too, so that we can produce episodes more frequently.
Okay, and so today we are talking about the Conductor library. Some may remember it or know about it as a great replacement for fragments and such sort of things.
Our guest is, of course, the author of Conductor, which makes the total sense, I guess, since he knows all his internals. Welcome to the show, Eric Cook.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, really excited. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Yeah, thanks. Even if you don't have used Conductor before, you might have used some other libraries Eric has worked on. For instance, Logan Square, JSON parser, which is based on annotation processing. It works really well. And lately worked on Conductor. And we hope that you will give us some insights today on how Conductor works internally and how to use it.
Absolutely, I'd love to.
I guess the main question is, what's wrong with fragments? I know it was asked a lot, but we want to see your perspective and why the Conductor was actually born.
Yeah, so I feel like this topic has kind of been beaten to death by some people, but I still run into a ton of people who just have never heard of it. So I'll be happy to give a quick overview. I've been doing single activity apps for a long time. I started even before fragments were a thing, back before I was a good developer and just threw all my logic in whatever class was available. At the time, that class was Vues, just because I had a few clients at the time who I would make them an app and they would just wonder, why are these transitions so much uglier than my iOS app? This was in the 2.whatever days when activity to activity transitions just weren't nice at all. So I started to develop single activity apps. So when Fragments came out, it was super exciting because they had this built-in back stack. They had everything I needed to do this really well without a bunch of hacky code, especially as a little bit more of a junior developer at the time. I was super excited, and I developed this fairly good system for managing the back stack and transitioning between fragments, but I could just never really get it flawless or perfect. There were just always headaches, Crashlytics. I would always get random stuff from either some Chinese device or some person just doing something that I would have never expected them to do. Common things I would run into were just headaches around the fact that fragment transitions are asynchronous in nature. Just created timing issues or states that I wouldn't have expected. There were also just kind of unexpected lifecycle states that I just don't know how the app got into. I still, to this day, I'll look at stack traces from those apps and I'll just say, how is this possible? This should have never happened. I'm sure people out there have used fragments pretty extensively and kind of realized that debugging fragment issues aren't the most fun. Fragment manager is pretty complicated. Fragment transitions are pretty complicated. Just figuring out what's going on isn't always super easy. Yeah, so there's the lifecycle states that I wouldn't have expected, issues with asynchronous transitions. There were a few times when I wanted, as a external entity, so maybe the activity or something like that, I would want to listen for lifecycle events of fragments, maybe even just listen to the back stack so I know if the button in the upper left of the toolbar should be the hamburger menu icon or the up arrow. Just little things like that were just harder than they should have been. And then there's issues with confusing lifecycles. There's so many callbacks, not necessarily in a certain order. And then there's the issue of not being able to infinitely, or to nest them as much as you want to. Nesting Fragments has gotten better in the last year or so, but it's still not exactly where I would like it to be. So yeah, actually a few of these issues have been resolved in the last year or so. For instance, the asynchronous fragment transitions, there is now a commit now method. So some of these are being addressed. Fragments still aren't perfect. And ultimately it was just something where I just saw so many bugs that I couldn't control that I didn't know what was causing them. And I just wanted something that was easier to manage, made a little more sense, I could think through better, and that, frankly, I could control because it was open source and something that me or someone else could modify if need be.
And I got to ask, have you actually thought about testing when implementing Conductor? Because I think it's a kind of a natural progression to move away from the framework and work on your own code so we can mock it and stub it and something like that.
Yeah. So most of my apps use, Hannes, I haven't really gotten to do MVI too much. So most of my apps are MVVM. Most of my testing is in the view model layer. I try to keep my controllers relatively light so that I don't have to do a ton of UI testing. But yeah, when I do, that's actually one thing that I do wish was a little easier was to mock out things at the Android level. Most of my UI testing is Espresso.
Okay. Yeah, I think the issues you have described with fragments are pretty familiar for the most of our listeners too. So have you started right way from scratch because you also wanted to build something like that? Or have you looked up for existing solutions and you haven't found some solutions like, I don't know, I'm not sure, when have you actually started with Conductor? Was there some alternatives like Flow from Square or Scoop from Lyft already out there? Or
yeah, so the announcement of Flow is kind of what got me, and I think a lot of other people, thinking about this. I was already pretty unhappy with fragments, but I didn't have really words to put to it, and I hadn't really thought through, like, maybe I should just write something else that's similar. So I feel like I owe Flow a lot. You know, they got this whole conversation about how backstacks and views should work, and I love that they did that. The project itself, I kind of had trouble getting into. I mean, especially in its very early states, there were bugs, most of which are fixed now.
Mm-hmm.
But even to this date, it's still in an alpha, and I don't know if it's ever going to leave. So it's not anything that I would probably want to use in a production app, just given that it is in alpha right now, and I don't know if it's going to leave. So I started working on what ended up being Conductor. That wasn't the plan at the time. At the time, I had just started an agency with a few friends called Blue Line Labs, which is what the GitHub repo is under. And we were developing lots of kind of smaller apps for startups. And I just, I wanted a way to quickly, you know, get in and start doing the things I want to do and not have to worry about all this lifecycle stuff and writing my fragment manager over and over again. So I started to work on what ended up being Conductor pretty shortly after the famous blog post from Square about Flow. And it was maybe a month or so after I'd started working on this that Scoop got announced. And Scoop was awesome. I really liked it. There were a few things that I wasn't a huge fan of. So for example, like Scoop, the reason it's called Scoop is because it does scoping, and scope and Scoop sound similar. But I actually didn't need that. I mean, I used Dagger anyway. I wasn't going to use their scoping mechanism at all. And I also wasn't a huge fan of how annotations bind a view and a view controller. I think they call it a view controller.
Mm-hmm.
Together so tightly. You know, sometimes there's like one screen that, depending on your state or how it's being presented, you might want to have two different layout XMLs. And since they had so tightly bound those two things, I felt like you couldn't do it. They also forced you to use layout XML, which I keep thinking maybe I'm going to start using something like Anko at some point. I still haven't, but you know, I want to leave my options open.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to be bound to layout XMLs. So yeah, I kind of started a little bit after Flow. I think the Lyft guys got started before me because they released before me, but somewhere in that time range.
And how long did it take to get to a first, I don't know, not probably production ready, but...
I think it wasn't super long. To get from kind of the idea to something that I was plugging into an app. So again, this is when we had just started the agency. We were working on with a lot of startups, like really scrappy, just getting started startups. So, you know, like things are moving crazy fast. You know, they would give us 50 new features a day to implement and then decide 40 of them were stupid. So just really, really fast moving work. So because of that, I felt pretty comfortable kind of throwing in some code that I was still working on, it was just a great time for me to do it. So between the idea and when it was actually in an app was probably under a month.
Wow.
Not that it was necessarily ready to be a V1 or anything like that, but I knew it wasn't going to crash. I knew it wasn't going to do anything crazy, which for these clients was really all I needed. And then as they progressed and matured as a company and got, you know, closer to not just doing MVPs, but legitimate V1s, Conductor kind of went along with them and was, you know, at a much more mature state at that time as well. So it was great. You know, as our clients were growing, the library was growing, and everything just worked really well timing wise.
Oh, nice. And the final 1.0 release was about a few months later, or?
Yeah, I think we probably had 4 or so apps using Conductor before it hit 1.0. And I think they had probably been on the Play Store for, 3-4 months probably before it ever went to GitHub, before it hit a 1.0. I wasn't sure I wanted to open source it yet. So yeah, it took a bit to do that.
Okay, thanks about that and about the release so we can all use it and just be grateful for that. You mentioned this entity called the controller. And I think it's a great time to explain to our listeners about the key components of Conductor, like router and controller and such, because maybe next questions will be more technical, so we can all understand what we are saying, actually.
Sure, yeah. I realize we probably should have started there now. So I think it's probably easiest to explain it in terms of fragments, because that's probably what users are going to be most familiar with. So the router is what you can think of. It's most synonymous with a fragment manager. So this component is responsible for navigation. You can push and pop your controllers. You can reset the back stack. So it kind of gives you control. It's the way that your controller will interact with your activity in the same way that a fragment manager is how your fragment will interact with your activity.
And a controller is equivalent to a fragment, or what is exactly a controller?
Yeah, pretty much. So it's your view controller, which is actually what I wanted to call it, but I thought people would think I was trying to port iOS view controllers to Android if I called it that, so I didn't. So yeah, it's the view layer of your app.
Okay, makes sense. So there's basically those two components, a controller and a router. So the controller is similar to a fragment. What are the responsibilities of a controller then? Instantiating the view, does it get the lifecycle, and who are the components in there do deal with lifecycle at all?
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. So it instantiates the view. The view is then displayed in activity, and the whole time that's being it's being displayed, there are lifecycle components similar to what you would get in a fragment. There are far fewer lifecycle events because one of my problems with fragments was just that there's so many and it gets confusing. So the lifecycle is much simpler. So your constructor is kind of your entry point into the controller. So it doesn't have an onCreate in the way a fragment does. You actually just use your constructor, which is nice because then you can have final fields. That was another thing that always bothered me about fragments was that you can't have a field that's final, which if you're the only one working on it is fine. You can just make a mental note, I'm never going to change this thing. But as soon as you hire a junior developer or someone, even just someone less experienced in the code base, they might not know what you want to be unchangeable. They might not know what things you want to be immutable. And they could just go ahead and change it whenever they want. So I really like the fact that the constructor is actually your entry point and you can have your final fields.
So the constructor is basically like onCreate for fragments.
Similar. The one difference is that in a fragment, onCreate has happened after it's been attached to an activity. So at that point,
right, yeah.
Yeah, so you have a context, you have your activity, you can do all those things. With a controller, obviously, since it's a constructor, it's not attached to anything. You're just instantiating the object. So that is the one difference. But yeah, so then from the constructor, you have onCreateView, which is very similar to a fragment onCreateView. You just create your view. And then from there, once it's added to the activity, there's a onAttach method, which is signifying that the controller's view is attached to the window of a visible activity. So it is possible for an activity to have a window even if it isn't visible, even if it's in on pause. So this will only be, this means that you're in an activity that isn't paused, that's actually resumed, and that your view is attached to the window. So those are kind of the two things that onAttach means. So then you have the opposite of all of those methods as well, onDetach, onDestroyView, and then onDestroy, which is kind of the opposite of the constructor. And actually, there are two kind of newer methods that I've just added, which is on context available and on context unavailable. Those aren't even in the lifecycle diagram. I just added them. I don't think they're even in a final release yet. But the reason for those is because of what we had talked about earlier, how your constructor doesn't have a context. It did make things like dagger injection difficult because you never knew quite when you were supposed to inject all your things. So on context available signifies that it is attached to an activity, even if it isn't visible. So when you first create it, you first add it to a router, you're going to get on context available. If Android kills your process and then restores it, even if your controller is all the way in the background and isn't visible, you'll get on context available. So you can do your dagger injection. Maybe you can kick off some network calls, start observing database changes. Basically anything you would want to do in onCreate for a fragment that isn't just instantiation related.
That actually sounds so simple, especially if you consider the fragment lifecycle, the activity lifecycle, and the communication. It's actually quite simple, and thank you for that, because I think all of us viewed these huge lifecycle diagrams, and if you look at the controller GitHub page, there is a diagram as well, and it's quite small and easy to understand, so that's great. And I encourage everyone to take a look at it.
And also a problem with fragments is that they behave slightly different whether or not they are on the backstack or not. So I don't think that fragments API is that bad, actually, and I think I can deal with it. But the fact that they behave differently from, I don't know, whether or not they are on the backstack, whether or not they are inflated from XML layout, whether or not they are in retaining mode, makes it a little bit hard to deal with fragments. Yeah.
Erica, can you actually explain us a little bit sample application or just a little simple example on which callbacks of conductor lifecycle should the user use? And what about these corner cases like retaining and screen orientation change? What should we actually use in these cases?
Yeah, so it's similar to fragments or activities. You know, sometimes you're going to use all the callbacks. Sometimes you'll really only create a view if you have an extremely simple screen. So it's kind of hard to tell. I think the minimal application would just create a view and, you know, you can bind your buttons from there and maybe that's it. Maybe you want, if you're going to be doing network related things, you're probably going to want to use on attach so you know if it's actually visible. But yeah, it is going to go on a case by case basis. And then, sorry, the edge cases you asked were, orientation
and retaining fragments as well. But we can go step by step.
Yeah. So on a orientation change, your controller actually will be retained across orientation changes, not just orientation, configuration changes. So even if the host activity is destroyed for whatever reason, maybe Android kills it when it's in the background, maybe you're changing orientation, whatever it is, even if your host activity is destroyed, your controller will stick around as long as your activity isn't just finishing. If your activity is finishing, the controller will be destroyed. But if it's being temporarily destroyed, your controller instance will actually stick around and be continually reused. So the view itself will be destroyed, so you don't get a memory leak when your activity gets destroyed. But your controller will continue to be there, so continue doing whatever background process it's working on, and you won't have to worry about weird, you know, a lot of times there's just problems around subscribing, unsubscribing, resubscribing to things like network calls and databases when you're dealing with configuration changes. And hopefully Conductor kind of fixes that in a similar way to a retained fragment would.
So if I understand correctly, if the device actually changes orientation, I guess it on destroy view will be called, and after the orientation change happens, it will call on create view. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you'll get your on detach method to tell you that you're no longer attached to a window, and then you'll get your on destroy view. And then once the controller is recreated, reattached, you'll get your onCreate view, and then you'll get onAttach again to tell you that everything's been recreated, totally visible, user's ready to interact with it.
And is there also a callback when the controller is destroyed finally?
Yes, there's an onDestroy.
Okay.
So basically the most interesting question, I guess, a lot of people will ask when they'll start using Conductor is when to start and stop their glorious HTTP requests, because almost every Android application does it.
That's a great question. And it is kind of on a case by case basis. I mean, generally if it's something that like maybe it's a network request that happens as a result of a button press, then in that case, you know, you just do it in your set on-click listener or whatever it is. A lot of times I'll do things in on-context available because I usually inject my retrofit instance, and once it's injected, I want to start using it. But yeah, it is kind of in a case-by-case basis, depending on if it's just a network request that needs to happen because something is visible, or is it because the user did something, or can it be put somewhere else entirely, not even in a controller? Maybe it's just something that has to happen, and all of the results of that are going to go into the database, which then the controllers are observing the database and displaying that from there. So yeah, totally in a case-by-case basis, and kind of hard to say, like, this is the right way to do it.
Oh, I have a following question on what is it called, on context available callback?
Yes.
So, okay, so let's go through the lifecycle event just for a minute, step by step. So first the controller will be instantiated and the constructor will be invoked, right?
Yes.
And then will be the on context available be called, or on create view as next step?
So on context available is called the second it's added to a router. So that's the first callback. That's the first real lifecycle event you're going to get. And that is because, like we were talking about earlier, on create, there's nothing similar to on create. So there's really no way to know, like, I'm attached to an activity. I have a context. I can do things with that, even if no one's looking at me. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what that does. So yeah, it'll be constructor, on context available, on create view, on attach, and then the opposite of all those when it's getting torn down.
And if the controller, the controller doesn't get destroyed during screen orientation changes or config changes, but I assume that on context available will be called again after a screen orientation change, or is it a one-time lifecycle event the controller gets?
It will be called again because it is a different context. It uses the activity context. So just to prevent leaks, if you're doing dagger injection or somehow referencing your activity, it calls it again.
Mm-hmm. But then it's up to you, for instance, to not inject the retrofit interface again on context attached. So that's something that the developer have to take care of, not injecting, for instance, the retrofit service again.
Right. I mean, that your retrofit service is probably a singleton, and it doesn't really matter if you inject it twice. It's the same instance that you're going to get both times.
Mm-hmm.
But you would have to keep that in mind.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, so let's go a little bit deeper. I quite often hear people talking about, I could write my own backstack or fragment replacement. It is not that hard, but I assume that it actually is a little bit harder than people think. Can you give us a little bit of insights how Conductor works behind the scenes? For instance, how is a controller retained? How does the router works? How do you determine lifecycle events? Can you give us some insights?
Yeah, definitely. So those people who think that they can write a backstack implementation are probably right. To do a basic implementation isn't that hard. And that's actually exactly what I was thinking when I got started. If I knew it was going to be this huge project that took this much time, I probably never would have started. But yeah, I mean, to do something basic that allows you to push and pop something to the screen isn't that bad. It's when you start taking all of these edge cases into account that things get kind of crazy. So yeah, your question about how does this stuff actually work in the background. So the first interaction you have with Conductor is to call conductor.attachRouter. So you'll do that probably from your activities on create method. So what that does is it just gives you a router that you can then use to modify your UI as you want. So internally, what that's actually doing when you call attach router is it creates a retained headless fragment, a native fragment, not a support fragment, just so we're not forcing anything on people. So it creates a retained headless fragment behind the scenes. And this fragment is responsible for creating and keeping track of all the top level routers in your activity. It also, so this fragment also receives all the necessary callbacks that you get from your activity and forwards them along to the routers. The routers then delegate all those callbacks to its controllers. So some events will be forwarded to all controllers. So for example, on save instance state, you're not going to want to lose any state. So that method will be passed from this hidden fragment onto the routers, and then those routers will then call that on each controller that they host. So then all of that will get passed all the way back down to the fragment, which then passes it to the activity. So all your state is saved. So that gets pretty hairy sometimes. But then there's also events that only get forwarded to certain controllers. So for example, on activity result, you don't need every controller to know that there's an on-activity result. You only need the controllers that are actually interested in that certain event. So the retain headless fragment gets all the callbacks from the activity, forwards them to the routers that are interested in them, and then those routers forward those events to the controllers that are actually interested in them. So it gets kind of crazy, but it's actually not that complicated when you get down to it. You know, it's a fragment that's receiving all these events and forwarding it along.
And I guess I got to say that the internal state machine is quite complex, I guess, from your words. But for the end user, for the developer, actually it's quite simple. And again, if you look at the diagram on the GitHub page, it's quite simple. So I guess it's a great job on the API. So thank you about that.
Thanks. Yeah, that was kind of one of the goals. Was there's just a lot of rough edges in the fragment, in the activity, or sorry, in the Android lifecycle. And one of the goals of Conductor was to kind of smooth those over so the developers don't have to worry about things happening out of order. So Conductor tries to get all of the lifecycle events to happen in a very specific order, even if Android itself is doing things in different orders. And it tries to just simplify the whole thing. So yeah, the idea is, even if the internals are very complicated, that the external interface will be relatively simple, easy to follow.
We got to say to someone from Google about that. No pun intended, but it was. I guess a little bit sidewalk, but at the time being, my company actually tends to migrate our application to a single activity, like structure, and maybe you have some recommendations about implementing single activity, maybe something not like just use Conductor, but something else, and just some input will be very helpful. And I guess it will be helpful for our listeners who tend to move to the single activity, but kind of afraid to do so.
Yeah, so I think single activity is great. It just opens up a lot of things that going from activity to activity to activity doesn't give you. There's just one entry point for your app. There's one thing that's managing everything that's going to be displayed on screen. You don't have to worry about which activity gets launched, what's still in the background. Transitions can just be much nicer because you can just use Object Animator, you can use the transition framework, you can use whatever you want to like very smoothly go from view to view. Whereas you can do a lot of those things now with activities, but I assume most people are still targeting older versions of Android that still have whatever activity transition the OEM decided to give it. So yeah, I mean, single activity is great. Even if you're not using Conductor, I'm a huge proponent of single activity. I just think it's simpler from a development standpoint and it looks nicer from the user standpoint. So yeah, I think that's awesome. In terms of general recommendations, I guess I don't have any. Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of things change in terms of the way you develop thing. If you're used to using tons of activities, not a lot changes. You stop using intents, you start using whatever else you use to go from screen to screen. But from the user's standpoint, other than maybe having smoother transitions, there shouldn't be a lot of changes. And from a development standpoint, there's honestly not a ton either. You have a different component that's housing your views and controller, your view controller, but that's about it.
And do you have any idea actually about why Google decided to move on with multiple activities and what their use case at all? Because I don't know about you, but in each application I develop, I just in the end sitting there and thinking about why haven't I started it using just a single activity? It makes things so much simpler.
Yeah. I know one of Android's big pushes, especially in the beginning, was inter-app communication intent system, which is super awesome, super powerful, like something that iOS never had up until really recently. And even then, it still isn't as powerful as Android. So just to make the whole intent system work, you kind of need different entry points into the app. So I get why they made a lot of the decisions they did, and especially way back in the day when we weren't thinking about super like buttery smooth UIs, nice transitions. We just weren't thinking about that stuff that much. So it probably didn't really matter. You know, it's just nice to have one unit of thing that is controlling your view, and that's what the activity was.
That's interesting. I personally tend to build apps with multiple activities, but with just either without fragments or with just one single fragment in there. But yeah, interesting. Yeah, interesting conversation on that. Another thing that I totally agree with is what you have mentioned before, that animations or changes from one fragment to another fragment in a single activity, or with conductor from one controller to another controller, is something that iOS did in the past better, to be honest, and gave a better user experience. There were also some kind of delay, for instance, if you click on a button in activity A until activity B starts. There was quite some milliseconds between that. And I think the real big advantage for me is that the UI and UX for the user gets better if you do a single activity-based application, because you can do animations and stuff like that very, very easily and very, very nice. And I think Conductor has a really awesome API to do that. Can you introduce change handlers and how they work?
Yeah. So a controller change handler is what will transition from one controller to another. So they're used whether you're pushing a controller or popping a controller or setting the back stack or replacing a controller. No matter what you're doing, you're using a controller change handler to do that. So all a controller change handler is it will get your whatever the container view that will host all of your controllers is, and it will get the old controller's view and the new controller's view. Both of which might be null. If you're popping the last one, there won't be a new controller. If you're pushing the first view, there won't be an old controller. But it will get whatever views have to be there, and it's just responsible for making sure the new view gets added to the container. So at its heart, that's all it is. You can just call a simple add view, and that can be your change handler. But it gets really interesting when you start using animator change handlers or transition change handlers, which allow you to use Android's animator framework and transition framework. So there's a few built-in change handlers. So there's like one that fades from one to the other, just a nice crossfade effect. There's a a simple push, like a horizontal change handler. There's one that's vertical. You know, just little simple things that are nice to have. But they're really powerful because you can use whatever animator you want to. You can use whatever transitions you want to. And yeah, it just allows for really powerful, really smooth transitions that are between controllers, which are much lighter weight than an activity or even a fragment, which means they're probably going to get instantiated faster and just be visible to the user faster, which is, yeah, really nice and very powerful.
Yeah, I really like that API. And especially in contrast to fragments, it allows you to have control over when an animation starts, when it ends. Because on fragments, you basically have to provide the animator and then you pass it, then the fragment manager grabs this animator and runs it for you and so on. But mm-hmm. you have no control over when it starts, when it will be finished and so on. So yeah, I think the change handlers API is really, really awesome to build a great user experience.
Also, a little bit note about iOS. I'm not an iOS developer by any chance, but as I heard, if you change between the analog of activities view controllers, you just handled the instance of next view controller and you just pass your arguments there. So actually it's quite interesting that you have your current controller and the next controller, and this way you can animate better. So it's kind of interesting similarities.
Yeah, iOS's default transitions are definitely a lot nicer than Android's transitions. Both have like very powerful options that allow you to do a ton of customization, but iOS's is definitely a lot smoother kind of off the bat or without doing any customizations.
So we talked about controller, we talked about router, we talked about change handlers. But is there something like fragment transaction that connects the dots between each components, or how does it work in Conductor?
Yeah, exactly. So there's something called a router transaction, very similar to a fragment transaction. It does do a little bit of different things, though. So your transaction will have the controller that is going to get pushed or whatever is going to happen. And then it also is responsible for passing in the controller change handlers. So when you create a router transaction, you'll pass the controller that's going to be shown, and then you'll pass in the controller change handler that will be used to push it. At that time, you'll also pass in the controller change handler that's used to pop it. So a lot of times, maybe you'll want to slide left to show or slide right to show a new controller, slide left to dismiss it. So you just pass all of that in when you're actually pushing it to the router. All of that can be overridden if you decide, if some event happens that means you need a different transaction or transition, you can definitely override that. But by default, all that is just passed in when you create the transaction.
Oh, and is it saved into a bundle, or how does the fragment, not fragment, but the controller transaction is restored after, for instance, a process death or something like that? How does Conductor know how to restore and how to, it doesn't even restore things like that, or
Definitely. So everything is stored in bundles. So when onSave instance state is called by your host activity, that method, like I explained earlier, gets delegated to each of the routers and each of the controllers. So that's from the user standpoint that each of their controllers will have onSave instance state called. Internally, it's also saving a ton of other stuff. So it's going to save all of your change handlers that you're using. It's going to save all of your transactions. It's going to save the state of your backstack, what's visible, what's not visible. It saves a ton of stuff. So yeah, everything is saved. So if Android decides to kill your activity, when it comes back, it should come back exactly the way you left it at pretty much any time.
But then all these components have to have a default constructor with a bundle, or how does it work?
That is exactly right again. So for the most part, an empty constructor is used. In the case of a controller, you can either have an empty constructor or you can have a constructor that takes a bundle. And that's, again, what we talked about, how you can have all your final fields just because you can get everything from the bundle then. So yeah, all of these components have either a default constructor or a bundle constructor, yeah.
And one last question that bothered me really, really about fragments is, why are they running async? I assume that conductor is running immediately the transaction, or how does conductor work? Or do you have any idea why a fragment transaction is running in async or postponed until the next main loop is available to execute it or dispatch it?
You know, I read something from a Googler about why they made that decision a while ago. It was actually at the time when they created the commit now method that is synchronous. They wrote about why they had asynchronous by default, and I don't even remember what it was. I remember thinking it made sense for some cases, but not most. But yeah, a conductor is always synchronous. So yeah, when you tell something to happen, it's going to happen.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So there was never a reason for you to make it async. I would expect that fragments have some kind of lifecycle-ish issues to work around by doing that asynchronously. But as you haven't experienced any kind of issue with conductor, I assume. I don't know. I have no clue why it's asynchronous.
We just keep asking on kind of inconvenient questions about Google infrastructure. mostly because I guess developers just keep asking this question a lot of times, and we still haven't received any answer. So sorry about that.
So fragments do a lot that controllers don't. So fragments can be your view controller. They can also just kind of be a unit of work that you're using that, you know, headless fragments do a bunch of things, but never display anything. So I'm sure that comes into it. Fragments are just kind of this jack of all trades component that can be used for tons of different stuff. Whereas a controller is a very specific thing of this is going to be your view controller. So I think because it's more targeted, more focused on doing one specific thing, it's probably able to avoid a lot of the issues that might have come up with when designing fragments for Google.
And you touched the topic about routers. And I guess the next following question, you mentioned the fragment nesting and the child fragments. What about child controllers and child routers? Does it make any sense to do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So for whatever reason, when I did 1.0, I decided that it wasn't that important and you only needed to go one level deep. I was very quickly told on GitHub issues that didn't make any sense. So yeah, Conductor version 2 has full support for infinitely nesting controllers. So a controller can have, you know, 50 levels deep of other controllers. They probably shouldn't, but you can. So yeah, there's a get child router method that every controller will have. And so yeah, your top level controller will be hosted in an activity, and then from there every other controller will be hosted in another controller. As the deeper you go, it'll just be, yeah, so you can infinitely nest them, you can have as many as you want. I still haven't found a great use case for having more than one or two, but go for it if you want to.
And can you give us like an example when you actually want to use this, like child nesting and such, because I just can't imagine one.
Sure. So a super easy example is view pagers. So with fragments, when you have a view pager, you'll have your host fragment, and then you'll have a view pager where each page is a fragment. And kind of the same idea with controllers, you have your host controller, each page can be a controller. So that's kind of the most common use for child controllers, even though you're not directly using them as a child controller. That's what it actually is behind the scene. Another example would be, one I've seen is that people want to have pretty much everything in their UI be a controller rather than hosted in the activity. So maybe if you have a toolbar that's static at the top, that will be your host controller. And then everything under that will be a child controller. Yeah, there's a lot of different examples of exactly why you would use it. And it, again, yeah, it's a case-by-case basis. I guess another example would be maybe you want to have a dialogue type thing that, so not an actual dialogue, but, you know, some kind of pop-up that just covers part of your screen. You could push that as a new controller at an equal hierarchy, or you could just have that as a child, depending on how you want it to display.
So basically, it's kind of an analog for fragments in initial design of activity. So basically, if you want to decouple some things from activity, we were introduced with fragments, and I guess that's a use case of child controllers. Do I understand that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I guess another example I just thought of would be like master detail would be another example for child controllers. But yeah, kind of same reason you would want a child fragment. It's just the child fragment API doesn't always work super well. Or at least didn't. Honestly, I haven't used fragments for quite a while. So for all I know, this stuff is fixed. But as of my knowledge, it doesn't work super well.
And I'm sorry, this will be actually the last question about fragments and related to them. Is it possible to add a controller without actually putting it in the back stack? I don't know if someone actually needs it, but it's in fragments API, I guess.
It is. Yeah, and that is not actually possible right now. With controllers. So I have had a few people request that. It's especially nice for like bottom navigation. Maybe you'll want to have a bunch of controllers that are detached from anything, and then as you hit the bottom button, they come into view. So that's not something that's currently supported. That's something that I will probably be adding in either in the coming future with version 2, or maybe that'll have to be a version 3 feature depending on how the API works out. But yeah, so with fragments, there's a few reasons you wouldn't want to add it to the back stack. One would be that it's actually just a unit of work and it doesn't have a view whatsoever. And again, controllers are specifically the view layer. So there's no concept of a headless controller. And so that reason is kind of gone for fragments. And then another thing about that is that adding a controller to the back stack doesn't necessarily mean the previous controller is hidden. So one reason you might not want to add something to the back stack is if it's something similar to a dialogue where it's like a pop-up and you want the one behind it to still be visible, that might be a reason why you don't want to add it to the back stack. But in Conductor, you can do that. You can have multiple views in the back stack that are all visible to the user at any given time. And that's all controlled by the controller change handler API like we had talked about earlier.
But I guess with the bottom navigation, you can do it manually, I guess. You can just add a controller and just remove it from the router. Is it possible?
Yeah, exactly. So the only thing that isn't possible right now with bottom navigation is if I want to pre-instantiate, like if I have 5 buttons at the bottom and I want to pre-instantiate my 5 controllers, I can instantiate them. But you know, but if they're not visible, if they're not attached to a router, they don't really have any real power. They can't really do a whole lot. So that's the one change that is one change that will probably be coming soon, is the concept of a detached controller that you'll be able to do whatever with, even if it isn't attached to a back stack or a router.
While that sounds interesting, I'm a little bit skeptical that the API will be blotted somehow.
Yeah, that's the one reason I haven't done it yet. It is going to be hard to think through, but I think there's a good use case for it, but I am against API bloat, which is, yeah, again, just why I haven't done it, so.
I have another question. Since you have said that there is not some kind of controller without being attached or put on the back stack, how then a view pager works? I mean, a view pager has controllers in it that can be scored horizontally, but how are they working with that with the back stack or with the router? What is the trick behind them to support the Conductor?
Yeah, so there's Conductor has a support module, which is another Gradle dependency that you can add. And so when you add that, it brings in this ViewPager adapter. And or what it actually is a router ViewPager adapter. So each page is actually a router, not a controller. So probably you're only going to have one deep. So you'll just call router.setRoot with whatever controller you have. And you'll just display that one controller. But internally, those are all child routers of the host controller. Oh. So they all have their own backstacks. You can do whatever you want with them. For UX reasons, you probably won't be using the back stack too much. You'll probably just have one controller deep on each page.
I see. Yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah, it's nice workaround with the speed of the page world.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about why there are multiple activities. Is that sometimes we need an external access to our components of the application? And some examples are deep links and notifications and such sort of things. I guess it's still possible to reroute it to proper controllers from the activity, I guess. Is it possible, or what you will recommend for such cases?
Yeah, absolutely. So typically you would have different intents going to different activities if you have a multi-activity app. And then that activity will just display whatever it's for. The way I typically do apps, I just have one main activity. So that activity will parse any intent that's coming in. You can either do that straight from the activity, or you can have some kind of deep link router, or whatever you want to call a deep link handler, which is what I typically do. But regardless of how you end up parsing the intent, once you decide what actually needs to be displayed from the intent, routers fully support synthesizing backstacks. So if you get this deep link that's 10 levels into the hierarchy, you can fully synthesize that backstack by adding every controller into it that needs to be there, even if only the top level one is visible. You synthesize it, you call router.setBackstack, and then the user is instantly deep linked to where they want to be. And the back button still works perfectly. It'll go back to the one that should have been before that if you were deep linking into activities or fragments.
So it's actually possible to just use a single activity and map multiple intent filters and such and reroute notifications to that and navigate from activity to all your controllers.
Yeah, exactly. So I typically just parse the intent using the action or the URL or whatever it is. I've been playing with like doing an annotation processor for this. I don't have anything worthy of a V1 or anything like that, but I think Airbnb has a really good deep link dispatch library that uses annotation processing, but that's all at the activity level. So kind of what I've been working on is a similar idea, but actually at the controller level, where you can use annotation processing to figure out what your backstack should be and synthesize it from there.
And we would like to see that someday.
Yeah, it's still a ways off. I just kind of started on it in my spare time. But someday.
And do you have any edge cases or experiences where this cannot work? Because I think it actually can with proper routing mechanism, and you'll probably do it anyway.
I haven't seen one. There absolutely might be one that I'm not aware of, but I haven't seen it.
And I guess the same thing will go for permissions asking and start activity for result. Because basically you just have one activity and handle all your operating system navigation kind of logic in a single place and just simulate the state and go where you want to be. Am I correct?
Yeah, so you don't even have to do any of that from your activity. The hidden headless fragment that we had talked about earlier actually receives all those events. So from your controller, you can say start activity for result or request permissions. You can do whatever you want. And the result of those will actually go to the controller without you doing anything in your activity.
But for instance, for start activity for result, how does the router know to which controller the result have to be dispatched to? For instance, if you do a Facebook login, then you start an intent, right? And somehow you get the result of the login back. And
yeah.
Then it goes through the headless fragment. And how does the router or this headless fragment knows which controller has started this intent?
Yeah, that Facebook API. So if you're just doing a normal start activity for result, maybe you're going to the gallery to get an image or something like that, your controller would just do start activity for result. The router that hosts it would actually take a record of this controller asked for this request code. So then when the results come in, the router will know which controller to give the result to. In the case of Facebook, since they like to do everything differently, there's actually a method that I really wrote specifically for Facebook. That is register for activity results, because you're not directly calling start activity for result. You're using their SDK to internally do all that. You have to manually say, I want the result of Facebook. So that is an option if you use an SDK that kind of hides implementation details from you. But normal day-to-day stuff, you don't have to worry about that.
That's actually a funny joke we have around that you can develop a perfect application. It's perfectly simple and works every way you actually want, and someday you'll have to integrate Facebook SDK.
So true.
What else haven't we talked about it? What about testing? So if I write a conductor app, how would I test my app compared to, let's say, fragments or activities? Do I use Espresso, or what is your approach?
Yeah, so again, I would say most of your logic that needs to be tested should not be in any of these components. They shouldn't be in your activity or fragment or controller. Ideally, they'd be in your presenter or view model or, you know, whatever it is. So that's the unit that should be tested. And those are awesome because you can just do JVM tests. They don't rely on anything Android related. So you get your really fast JUnit, JVM testing. When you do want to do UI testing, I typically go to Espresso. Yeah, that's just kind of what I've always done. Honestly, I haven't tried a whole lot else. So if you guys have suggestions, let me know.
I just wanted to ask about the test rate here. Like, how much unit tests do you have usually, and how much instrumentation Espresso tests do you have? Like, on average, of course.
For an app that I've written?
Yep, usually like that.
That depends on the client. So, especially starting out, we tended to work with a lot of like really scrappy clients who were like, just get this done. And they were iterating so fast that tests would break constantly. So for them, very minimal testing, mostly because features that I wrote today might not even be around in a week. But for more established clients, I mean, that's for the MVP stage. Once you get to the V1, V2, it typically goes a lot deeper. So view models have as much testing as possible, just to make sure all that logic is really solid. And UI testing, yeah, that depends on the client, how much they're willing to pay for. That is the one kind of downside of currently I'm a freelancer. Before this, I was with an agency. Before that, I was with a product company. And product companies are great because they want to make sure nothing's going to break and you're going to write all the tests you can, try to get as close to 100% code coverage as you can without going crazy. So, but then once you step into the agency or freelancing world, things kind of change and you get clients who don't understand why they would pay almost double to get excellent code coverage. So yeah, very dependent on the client, what the app is, how complex it actually is.
Yeah, I think that's a good topic for a whole dedicated episode. And I know that Artem is also really deep in Espresso and UI testing stuff and so on. So probably we should do that in a future episode.
I can't wait to hear that one.
Yeah, me too. Especially talking with Artem about this could, I don't know. He could talk for hours about that. Yeah, another thing I'm curious is how do you test Conductor internally? I mean, not an application written with Conductor, but really the library or the framework Conductor itself. Do you write instrumentation tests or how do you test Conductor?
Yeah, so this is actually something I'm looking at revamping, hopefully in the very near future. So early on, I got started down the path of RoboElectric, which is, you know, sounds great because it allows you to run all these tests on the JVM. So runs much faster than if you had to start up an emulator or connect an actual device. So, you know, I did that because I wanted all these tests to run on CI. I use GitHub, so specifically Travis. And setting Travis up to download the emulator, set it up, start it up, wait for it to fully boot, and then get all the tests run is just painfully slow. So the promise of being able to use Android components on the JVM was super tempting for me. So I kind of went all in on it. And honestly, I've been paying for that ever since. RoboElectric is awesome if you know what's mocked and what's not, and if you know kind of what it can and can't do. So I didn't know all that early on. This was kind of my first foray into RoboElectric. And I ended up having to kind of make a lot of hacks to make the lifecycle match what it would match on a real phone. So some things that I needed mocked just weren't in RoboElectric. So I had to also add power mock, which adds another level of complexity and mocks and fake things that aren't necessarily what they would actually be on Android. So I got everything working. All the tests work. I've tested my tests using real devices to make sure that everything pretty much matches what would happen if you're running on a real device or an emulator. But I'm not super happy about all the hacks and the mocking that I had to do. So and again, like if I knew more about the internals of RoboElectric, what was real, what was mocked, I would probably be more comfortable about it, but that's not the case. So yeah, I am looking pretty soon at actually switching over to instrumentation testing and running all this on real emulators. It's going to be slower, maybe a little more painful, but I think the value of running on actual Android that isn't super mocked out is just worth it. So yeah, this is kind of a topic that's in flux and will be changing soon.
And Google actually hired a RoboElectric developer and they are trying to accelerate its growth, I guess. I don't know about the future plans, but hopefully it will become better.
Oh, awesome. I'm actually, for a lot of use cases, RoboElectric is great. I mean, a lot of things is actual Android code and it isn't mocked at all. And some things are mocked, some things are mocked, but like especially the lifecycle stuff isn't really mocked out very well at all. Like if I want to simulate an activity rotating, I actually have to call on pause, on stop, set an internal variable to tell it I'm just changing configurations, then call on destroy, then call on recreate. So I have to manually call these things, which like, I know that's how Android works, but it isn't Android. And it's possible that, you know, I have something slightly different than how Android actually works. So yeah, I would love to see RoboElectric get to the point where it just does everything, but it's just not at that point right now, especially when it comes to lifecycle events.
Yeah, I had some very similar thoughts on my libraries where I started with JUnit tests or with RoboElectric, and over the last 2 years or so, I basically moved most of those tests to integration tests on the real Android device with instrumentation tests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems that this episode will gonna beyond 1 hour. I have some advanced questions or stuff I have found during the research for this episode, and probably I can ask them very quickly and you can say one or two sentences about them.
All right.
For instance, let's go with, there's a feature in conductor or in controllers which is called set retain view mode. What is it good for?
So by default, when a controller is not attached to the screen, its view will be destroyed in order to save memory. So generally, that's great. Memory usage stays low. Views can be inflated fast enough that the user doesn't even notice. But sometimes views are expensive to recreate. So for example, a map view. And in this case, you would want to actually persist your view even if it isn't visible. So that's what set retain view mode does. It allows you to retain a view even if it isn't on the screen, just so you don't have to have an expensive recreation process.
But not obviously across screen orientation changes, otherwise you would leak memory, right?
Exactly, yeah. So if you rotate your screen or if the activity gets destroyed, you're going to have to recreate it anyway.
Okay, so it is retained as long as it is on the back stack and without screen orientation changes happening in between.
Exactly.
So the next thing I really, really like about Conductor is the lifecycle listener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lifecycle listener will allow you to, as an external observer, see any lifecycle events happening in a controller. So this is kind of similar to Google's new architecture components lifecycle aware stuff where, well, I guess you could already do it with activities as well. But yeah, it allows you to look at any lifecycle events as they happen on a controller without actually subclassing the controller, which is oftentimes what happens if you need events. So this allows tons of things. So there's there's a few different modules in Conductor that use this. So for example, there's RX lifecycle, there's auto dispose, which is similar to RX lifecycle. But works differently. And there's also support for Google's new architecture components, which all of those things leverage this. Another thing I was working on yesterday was like Glide came out with version 4.0 and they have support for lifecycle for fragments and activities. And obviously they didn't do anything for Conductor, but it was super simple. Within 5 minutes, I had Glide being fully lifecycle aware with Conductor just simply because all of that stuff is already built in.
Nice. And then the end user simply have to attach this Glide lifecycle listener and everything will work magically.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Okay, what else? Oh, there's also a target controller. What is it good for, or what's the idea behind target controller?
Yeah, so a target controller is if you start another controller and you want results from it. So maybe you're starting a controller to show a list of things. The user picks a thing from the list and you want to know what they picked. That the target controller mechanism just allows inter-controller communication.
Awesome. Yeah, that's all from my side. Do you have any other highlight we have missed so far?
I guess we can ask another question, which will help our listeners to make sure the conductor is awesome. Do you know any companies or big applications that actually use conductor in production?
Yeah, so I've used it a ton, but I don't have any, like, I have 1 million download app, but for the most part, they're smaller than that. But yeah, the biggest I'm aware of are The Score, which is a sports app. I think it's mostly big in the United States, but I'm not sure about that. Gas Buddy is also pretty big, and then KeepSafe. Those are like the 10 million plus download apps that are using it. The official Reddit app, I think, uses it. I saw an AppBrain that they use it. I'm not actually sure, though. I haven't used it myself. And then I know there's a bunch of others in the kind of the million download range, but most of them are from languages that I don't speak and I don't actually know what they are.
Oh, nice. Oh, since you have mentioned before that you are freelancing these days, I assume that you are going to convince your clients that you should go with Conductor when building their apps. Is it hard to convince them, or how is the acceptance of Conductor when doing freelancing?
Yeah, so that's one of the really nice things about freelancing versus an agency work is that I'm just one guy. I have limited time. I can be very picky with the clients I take on. So I take on clients that are dedicated to really high quality apps that will let me do good testing for the most part. that are really invested in getting the app, you know, to be stable, maintainable. So, and then I also take on apps or clients that are willing to let me try new things. So, because of the clients I picked, I've been able to start using Kotlin pretty much exclusively, RxJava really extensively. And then, yeah, I make sure I always use Conductor as well. So, just because I can be selective with clients, I haven't had any issues with getting clients that are going to let me kind of have full control over how things are designed and maintained.
Okay. I would have expected that the clients would say, yeah, but in the future, probably someone else has to maintain it. And therefore, we would like to stick with Fragments or something like that. But glad to hear that you are pretty free in your choices.
Yeah, I also tend to get not super technical clients who don't know what I'm talking about anyway. So, whatever.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Arthur. Arthur?
Did we lose him?
Well, he's still... Arthur, aren't you hearing us? Okay, then I will go ahead. Okay, yeah, what's next with Conductor? Any plans to release 3.0? Is it pretty feature stable? What are the plans for Conductor?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely feature stable right now. One big thing that we had talked about earlier was the concept of either unmanaged or detached controllers, like for the bottom navigation example that we had talked about. I don't know how that's going to work or if that's going to require version 3 or if that's something that can pretty easily be put into version 2. That's something I'm still thinking through because honestly, all of my ideas would result in pretty bad API bloat, which I'm not interested in doing. Yeah, there's a few examples or a few ideas on GitHub issues of people that want new things. Most of them are kind of edge cases or special cases or like, my app does this crazy thing. Why doesn't Conductor support it? or Conductor does support it, but it takes extra work. So yeah, I guess there's no like really big roadmap for Conductor. Unmanaged or detached controllers would be the biggest one that I'm kind of working through right now.
Oh yeah, and one thing I'm really blown away is the pace and the fast response time you have on GitHub issues and on bug fixes and so on. That's really incredible. How do you manage to do that?
Oh man, it's tough. Sometimes, you know, when you're a freelancer, you have these times where you just have tons of clients who need things like as soon as possible and you're just totally overwhelmed. And then you have times where you just have one client that's pretty chill. So I kind of go with the flow. You know, if I have a ton of client work, I might only get an hour a week to look at GitHub issues and to try to resolve people's problems or, you know, help them figure out what's going wrong. Or not necessarily wrong, but, you know, what they're not seeing. And then I have other times where I have a bunch of time because my clients are more relaxed or there's just less of them at any given time. So I really try to take advantage of those valleys in actual paying work and use that for open source.
And thank you for that. Because actually, I'm quite fascinated that, again, with this diagram, because how simple it is and how simple are callbacks you provide. It's a great job. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
And I guess that's it.
Thank you very much, Eric, for... Well, actually, we haven't mentioned it, but Eric is located in Chicago and I'm in Europe and in Munich, and Arthur is joining us from Minsk. And Eric was very kind to wake up to record this with us very early in the morning to make it possible. Thank you, Eric, very much. Actually, Eric wanted to come to Munich for the Oktoberfest and record it there, but yeah, our CFO said that it's not possible right now. But anyways, if you are nearby Munich, I would like to have a beer with you. It would be really great.
Man, amateur hour, you guys don't even provide airfare.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you guys for having me. This was a lot of fun. It was great.
Yeah, thank you very much again. And thank you, Arthur. I'm stopping the recording now.